Hey, this is Rabbi Brian. This is the second episode of The Saturday Service. It was conducted in July 2020. I'm glad you're listening to it. There's a lot of people on Zoom. You should be able to hear them and keep track. We have a good time. Glad you're listening. Clock-ish, a moment early, Pacific Standard Time. I'm Rabbi Brian. This is The Saturday Service with me, Rabbi Brian. And with everyone who's here. So everyone who's here, wave, say hi, so we know you're here. Good, 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 good. We try our best to keep the microphones unmuted.
I don't know if he took a break at work. I just texted him.
But then sometimes things like that happen. So please try to be mindful, especially if you have a pet or a child that you tune out often, or traffic noises. See if you can't listen for those. Maybe we'll do it like a spiritual awareness thing. If everyone just make a little extra attempt to notice the sounds that are going on around them. It's good, guys. This is all good. We're in. We're here. I want to go back. There was a question that was asked of me. Oh, so I had started this way in the past. I had started with "This is the Saturday Service," and I said, "Warning: contains vulnerability and religion," and that part is true. If we do this right, there will be vulnerability and religion, both. And then I said that this is not something for kids. I said this is real religion. This isn't for kids. And I got called out. Someone said, "Well, why did you say that? Why did you say that religion's not for kids?" And I thought about it, and I realized it's something that I had said often, and I needed to reexamine it. And let me just get a show of hands. How many of you think giving children religion just at some base level in their childhood is a good thing, and how many of you would think it would be better to hold off? How many of you think, let's just take a gut poll. How many of you think, oh, look, it looks like the words are on my hand. How many of you would think that it would be a good idea to start religion with kids at a young age, and how many of you think, nah, hold off, really? Okay, there's some on each. I was on the hold off, and I think My thinking went like this, was that there are kids and they have only, and I'm going to correct myself, but there are kids and they have an understanding of a deity at a certain level, and I wouldn't want them to be hurt or confused to hear people speaking otherwise. And now I'm going to backtrack. That was my thinking. But I'm coming to this idea that maybe we need kids to hear all the different ways that we talk about the G-O-D word, and that it would actually be a better thing if we were completely honest and upfront with them the same way we are about other important topics, and we don't do a pediatric version of religion and pretend for them that that's where it ends. Boy, I just said a lot of things all at once, and it feels like that was really top-heavy for the very first thing to come out this morning. So, hi, I'm going to take a moment and look at your faces. Go ahead, Ruth. Give me something back.
I grew up in a religious household, and it was just part of the everyday nitty-gritty way that we lived, and we did the same with our children. It was our lifestyle. No riding on Shabbat,
right,
all that kind of stuff. So it wasn't a matter of stopping to teach anything.
I see what you're saying, is that the religion is what people are picking up. It's not what you teach them. Yeah. Okay, so Ruth, would you feel as comfortable if there were a 13-year-old in one of the boxes here? Would you feel as free with your words? I see some heads shaking no, right, because this is Zoom.
Okay,
so maybe, Can we all come up with how would we feel? And hi for people who just joined in. Glad you're here. Would you feel as comfortable being? So that was another thing, was I didn't want to have to censor myself. So I said, no kids. But I think what I really should have said is, I'm not going to censor myself. Bring your kids if you want.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah. Bring Alex, go ahead.
Well, you know, I grew up in a mixed religion household, so we didn't do the religion thing when I was a kid. And so I got to come to it as an adult. And I felt like, for me, that was a gift. Because I didn't have a whole lot of indoctrination one way or another.
Uh-huh.
I could kind of make my own decisions. So I appreciated that. I also see the other side of it. And I think that I, you know, for the purposes of this group, I would like it better not having kids in here, only because of, again, that self-censoring. And, you know, I know that there are a lot of parents who would be greatly offended to, you know, to see people dropping the F-bomb.
That I'm going to say that's on them. So I'm going to say this is parental advisory. Like, and everyone's welcome. If you're under a certain, like, ask your parents' permission before you join the Saturday service. But as long as they're here, I mean, I work with some kids who I would be totally comfortable being myself around. Could you guys do the same? If I've brought if a 13-year-old with whom I'm working towards a bar mitzvah was here, would you feel the same?
I think I would.
Okay.
I generally don't. I mean, I might censor not dropping the F-bomb, but I'm not going to change my saltiness.
Okay. That's fantastic. Anyone? So
you know.
Is there anyone for whom this is a deal breaker? And then we have a big question, and I don't know if there is or not. But if for anyone that's a deal breaker, does that then mean how do we choose? How do we then choose what do we follow? What do we do? So let's hope there's nobody who says this is a deal breaker. Oh, Rags, go ahead.
I just wanted to say that I was one of those people, and I've in recent years actually met some others, who started going to church on my own by myself at 9. I'm one of those who would have gone, ooh, and come to this on Saturday morning.
Yeah.
And, you know, probably rarely said anything, but just that same level of fascination of, you know, what are people doing? What are people doing?
Right. Getting to actually hear the adults be adults and talking about real things that matter.
Yeah. Oh, not, I mean, I detested Sunday school. Never, when I could control it, went where they were going to talk to me like a kid.
Right.
Made me paranoid, and it was
right. Terrible. And I think that was why I said.
To be able to be free, to be there, and for me, it was being silent. And then all those years as chaplain of the school, we started from the earliest ages presenting truths from all the major faith groups, their faith program. And so my favorite, this is the last thing I'll say, my favorite line was from one of the seniors in one who'd been all the way through. And she said, what she appreciated most, and she grew up in a completely a-religious family, was that they go out into the world and someone's sitting next to them on the bus, this is obviously pre-COVID, reading the Quran.
Uh-huh.
And they saw nothing to be afraid of, nothing to worry about in that. And just that sense of safety and the richness of the religious world. So now I'll mute.
Oh, thank you. Bob, what do you got, my friend? Thank you, Rags.
What if we looked at it as this is primarily somewhat of an adult group, but that if people want to bring their children into it, that then they're looking at it as a family to have, you know, and then they can explain if there's some question or whatever, people can be exposed to it.
I think just in this little discussion here, we see how churches get formed. Like all of a sudden now we need a policy. And now we need to figure out what's our position on children.
Mm-hmm.
Derek and then Gloria, go ahead.
My question regarding children and religion was not in the context of this group, but in a normal church service. Susan Shepherd, who's been here a few times and wasn't able to make it this morning, she's our designated lay minister. And she takes a lot of delight in having children in her contemporary worship.
Uh-huh.
I mean, even if they just pick up one little thing, like we have one child that comes, he's about 3 years old, I guess. And his mother was a little concerned that he wasn't going to Sunday school because the contemporary worship was at 9:30 at that point.
Uh-huh.
And we did not, but what she noticed was that one time we had a video up and he just perked right up and he pointed and he said, church.
Hmm.
What he saw, he connected. So it's like, yes, he is learning, even though he's there playing with Legos.
Yeah. So I think right now, so we would all say it's up to each church and each municipality to decide for themselves their position on inviting children. I think we're saying, though, if anyone here wants to invite children, please do. Candace and Derek, do you have your hand raised? Do you have a question as well?
I just wanted to make a comment on what you said to begin with. I was raised in a fairly religious household, and my five children, who are now all adults, were raised in a very religious household. At this point of my life, three of those adult children are non-believers / whatever you want to call it. Me, I'm a non-believer, almost an atheist. So I'm quite happy with the way my kids have gone. They're doing their own thing as adults, and they're choosing
good.
What they want. And I think even as children, they should be able to do that.
Thank you, Derek. And Candace, and then we're going to wrap this part up.
Not that you have any spare time, Rabbi, but would there be a way to have a much shorter service just for kids?
I'm sure there would be. I don't want to do a service just for kids.
I know.
Oh, do you want to do it? Oh, you're volunteering.
No.
Oh.
Well, I've never had kids. I just have furry kids with four legs that meow because they're starving right now.
Yeah. So, no, I don't. I like adults. I taught high school, and I could tolerate ninth graders. But
I'm not saying you have to do it.
Oh, someone else run a service for kids?
But would Jane be interested? Okay.
But... I can find some, but well, let's look. Is there a need? Does anyone who do we feel there's a need? Do people have children they want to send to something? Meg is giving us thumbs down. Shun. No, it's just a yes or abstain. It was not. Man, you guys are haters today. That's, wow. Okay. Moving along slightly. Let me show you, this was the very funny image I came up with. It's really just a joke for like 12 people. Rags, yes, you're in? So the thing you need to know is the Bechdel test, it was a feminist... author wrote this thing in a cartoon. It was about how feminist are the books that you're reading. Are the women who are in the book solely there for dealings with men, or do they have real relationships, especially with other women? And you can go through all of literature according to this test. And this was my funny meme. Thank you very much for entertaining me for sharing that. And I'm going to move us back. Everything. cracking myself up a little bit, folks. Last week we didn't have a service like this. Last week we had a discussion on racism. A lot of people able to be there? Is there any follow-ups? Anything we need to talk about? Or Can someone give us, like, what was a recap of the racism discussion in I don't know, two sentences or less? That seems fair. Anyone tell us one good point, one thing they took away from the racism talk? You don't have to recap it at all. Just what's one thing that stuck out for you, stuck into your mind? Oh, man. It's a quiet group this morning. Rabbi comes in. This is rough. Michael volunteers. Rabbi's waiting to see second hands. There are other hands that are going up. This is like a Bob's going up. This just makes it get of interest and get you going. Man. So, you know, the years I taught high school, I had classes where it was like they all had fallen asleep at once. I've done this before. I know what I'm dealing with. It was a hard start into racism. Michael, give us one fact, one fun thing you learned in our racism discussion.
Well, what I learned was two of many things. I'll do them all fast. One was co-teaching between you and
Devin.
And the young professor who's really committing her life to this as an academic system and training others. So yeah. There was such a great sense that this is not just an academic, scientific, but also a quote-unquote religious, ethical.
Yeah.
Number two is that you reiterated the reality that I understand from past activism in this area, that this is a white problem.
Yeah.
And not a black problem. And the responsibility for it rests with people focused on this enterprise.
Right.
It's an enterprise. And third, last piece, is it helped me to see something new. And I watched a video on a debate between Baldwin and
Buckley, William F. Buckley.
So it just reinforced my commitment.
Good, faith, good. Wonderful.
Faith. Let's put it that
way. Wonderful. Carol.
I thought one of the most important things that was said was that the system isn't broken. It's working exactly as it's supposed to work, which is to ostracize the people they want it to ostracize. So we have to break it.
Yeah.
We don't want to just fix it. We don't want to pretty it up. We have to really become conscious of the ways in which we have othered people, mm-hmm. whether they are black or Native Americans or Asians or Jews. We have to begin to see that we are not going to categorize people, but recognize we're all part of the whole.
Amen. Amen. I got some thumbs up happening there and some hollers. Well preached. Good. I think it's really important, and I'll give my takeaway, is that it's more than being an ally. It's being active as an anti-racist. It's making a stance and saying, I'm going to be an anti-racist, and that's something I need to do. Good. Yay. Good racial discussion recap. We talked about kids. Spiritual workout time. Da-da-da-da-da-da. Hold on. Get to this. That. Wait, I'm trying to get to my split screen. Oh, no. That one. Let's go with this one, folks. I talk a lot about this spiritual thing, and I just want to lay down and teach a moment of it. It's said that we live in these four different quadrants in the world, that we live in our lives, that there's the physical, the intellectual, the emotional, and the spiritual. It's very easy because it spells pies. What we're interested in is this one, the spiritual realm. They're not delineated so closely. There's a physical sense to the spiritual world. When you work out and you complete a marathon, there's a spiritual sense to that physical. There's an intellectual sense to the spiritual. We can understand what the spiritual is all about, and our thinking can get so big, we can get into the spiritual through the intellectual. And then there's the emotional, and I think there's the most overlap between those two, and it's sometimes harder to see. The emotional is how we respond in the world, and that's very related to the spiritual. There are four qualities to a spiritual to human existence, one of which is spiritual. Do you know what the other three are? Good. We got the pie part, the physical, the intellectual, and the emotional. Spiritual, we're going to break into five different sections. Five different sections. The spiritual... Somebody's having cereal, and I really hope you enjoy it. Thank you. The spiritual is marked by... If you live a spiritual life, you know there is a hierarchy of values. You know that not all things are equal. Your right to have cereal and split an infinitive are not as important as the value we have to put on giving people clean water. Right? There's things that are of different value. Living a spiritual life doesn't mean that you're value neutral. People get that a little bit confused. They think that you have to be okay with everything. You don't. There are values in a spiritual life. A spiritual life is also about transformation. Spiritual life is about transformation. The you who begins at a wedding, if you're getting married, and the you who ends after the wedding has happened, has been transformed. That's a spiritual life. A spiritual life is a life where you are constantly transformed. Spiritual life is not about us transforming the world. Spiritual life is about us being transformed by the world. Okay? Transformation. Third quality is there's something enduring, there's something infinite, there's some notion of a, like, try to define the word infinite. You can't. You try any example. There's something about a spiritual life that defies definition, and that would fall into this part, the infinite. A spiritual life is also marked by some sense in which we know it's not about us. It's about us, but it's not about any singular us. A spiritual life has to be a life about giving to others, about changing others. Okay, we have four qualities of the spiritual life so far. First one is the spiritual life is filled with?
Value.
That one was easy because it was written right there. Second, a spiritual life is a life in which blank happens. It starts with a T. A spiritual life?
Transformation.
A spiritual life is about some sense of endlessness. And then spiritual life number four is about? Right, it's not about us. Okay. There are four things under the cards.
Values, transformation, infinity, not about us.
Enduring. Yeah, good.
Transforming.
Good. And there's a fifth, which is my favorite one. Fifth quality of a spiritual life is the recognition, the realization, the knowledge that questions beat out understanding. Fifth quality of a spiritual life is knowing that knowing isn't the answer. Fifth quality of a spiritual life is knowing that while doubt is uncomfortable, certainty is ridiculous. The spiritual life is about living in this more comfortably. How is that? That was good for what I enjoyed that talk very much. And it's really nice to hear your appreciation of it as well.
Thank you. That involves a lot of trust.
What involves a lot of trust?
The last one.
Questions greater than statements? Yeah.
Without any, like,
but you could also ask, in whom were you trusting before? And how, if you were able to give the trust to that, why can't you give the trust to this? Who's in charge of what you trust?
You are, just having some sort of faith.
Yeah. I don't know. Faith is such a sticky word for me. I think a sense of
I don't mean faith. I mean
openness belief. That you can have.
Openness is great.
Openness. Oh, I got the Carol seal of approval on that one. Openness.
Being okay with not knowing.
Merton says, "You're a beginner, then you're more of a beginner, and then you're still a beginner." Because, as you said, if the second point is infinity, it's endless. You're never done, and that's why life isn't boring.
Amen. I got a quote to go along with yours. Comes from, I think it was Kafka, who said, the reason that your life feels infinite is because your task and your life are exactly the same length.
Beautiful.
Thank you. Okay, so everyone, look what you got here. You got a very simple understanding of what this spiritual thing that we're trying to do is. We have some definitions. Good job, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, I'm going to... Oh, I know what we're doing next. Here. Hold on, please. You guys know there's no exact map that I'm following, right? I just kind of figure out what I think we should talk about, and then hopefully it fits. This was the quote from 2 weeks ago. What's the difference between you and the saint? Do you remember that one?
Yeah.
It was basically, the saint is constantly tripping over joy, and you, my dear, think you still have 1,000 serious moves. Okay, so I just wanted to bring that up because I love that quote. Here's today's quote. Edgar Guest said, I'd rather see a sermon than hear one any day.
Beautiful.
Chances, the first thing you asked about bringing children here.
Yeah.
I've never thought we had to teach children religion. I thought they are watching us constantly.
Yeah.
And anything we do is much more important than anything we say.
Bring in the children. I love it. I'd rather see a sermon than hear one any day, right? If we bar children, what are we saying to them? We're telling them a sermon. We're just not saying it. I'd rather see a sermon than hear one any day. Who has an example of a sermon that they saw recently? Who has an example of a sermon they saw, not one that they heard, but you were at Costco and you saw this person doing this and you thought, that's a sermon I needed to hear, even though you didn't hear it. Go ahead, Stephen.
The Life of John Lewis.
I'd rather see a sermon than hear one any day. Amen. Amen. Yeah. Yeah.
Anytime we see an act of kindness.
Kindness. I'm going to give you the full quote because I thought this was such a, it's so old school. I mean, it's, I can understand now we have videos and we have memes, we can do things differently, but just why the poetry was so strong. I'd rather see a sermon than hear one any day. I'd rather one, there is a phantom voice that was happening. I'd rather one should walk with me than merely tell the way. The eyes are better pupil and more willing than the ear. Fine counsel is confusing, but an example's always clear. And all the best preachers are folk who live their creeds, for to see good in action is what everybody needs.
Amen. Amen. Learn more by what is taught than what is taught.
Right? Uh-huh. Very well put. Very well put, Nancy. We all had a discussion about taught and caught. Children are much more likely to catch something than to be taught something. Amen.
Well, come on. There's a rhyme in there. It's a poem. Children learn more by what is taught than by what is caught.
It's good. You could add the second verse to Edgar Guest's poem.
I have a book of Edgar Guest that I started reading when I was about four.
Oh, good. You might finish it one day.
Hafiz is my favorite poet.
Yes, 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 of course.
Go on, Rabbi. I'm done with my sermon.
And what I like is right when she said that, she hit the mute button.
I believe everyone should be muted unless they're speaking.
Oh, well, we have different theologies there.
Yeah, well, no, everyone here is quiet. I have been in groups that are not.
Yeah. It's a challenge. Anyone else have an example of seeing a sermon rather than hearing a sermon? Uh-oh. Say that again? Yeah. Absolutely. So I will turn this a little bit on you. Hey, people, you have homework. Preach. A lot. There's a great quote from Francis, I think it was St. Francis, who said, preach the Gospels often, use words only when necessary. Mm-hmm. I'm getting a nod. I got the right Francis? Okay, yes. Good. So, folks, this is your homework. Go be the person who someone else sees your sermon. Do I need to belabor that, or does everyone know what their homework is? Can I get a few nods? Okay, Rabbi, we'll do it even though we don't want to. Come on.
I believe that might be called an act of random kindness.
Well, thank you, Ray. I got it. And Ruth, what did you say?
I'm the traditional Thanksgiving maker. And when I was invited to Thanksgiving, I would volunteer at the local church beforehand to help feed everybody. The message was very clear.
Right.
It's not just that I'm able to enjoy Thanksgiving, but I want other people to enjoy Thanksgiving. Which is what I was talking about at the very beginning, Rabbi, is when you live the life.
Right. It's your living religion.
You're teaching the religion.
Good. Good. I tell you guys, I have an advantage you don't have, most of you don't have, is I walk around wearing this hat. And what this hat forces me to do is it forces me to go, oh, crap, if I don't act the most right, what are people going to say? And I want to be... I asked one of my classes once, I said, how come none of you have ever asked me about why I wear a hat? And one kid said, it's because you're representing. I was like, all right, I'm done. Yeah. So I want to read to you. I want to do something a little bit different today. I think I want to do this on the... I want to do this monthly. But I'm working on a book, and this is the title as of right now is Thoughts of a Liberationalist Rabbi, and I want to do a little reading from that for you today. A chapter, hold on. There we go. I want to read a chapter to you, and Alex, could you help, and for this part, no, that's good. Just keep, that worked, that's perfect. All right, so... Here's a chapter called Who's Your Daddy? And you'll understand why I'm reading this at this time. It's called Who's Your Daddy? It's called Ruminations on God's Dick, I tell my 87-year-old father-in-law. You're kidding me, he says. No, Padre, I'm not kidding. That's the book's title, Ruminations on God's Dick, a collection of digital age essays about religion. We each start laughing. You had me for a moment, partner. Phil, I'm not kidding. For about 6 seconds there, I thought you were serious. We continue to laugh, although maybe we are laughing for different reasons. For months in pre-publication, this book was entitled... Ruminations on God's Dick. Let me know and I'll show you the mocked-up cover art of a giant black phallus silhouetted against the heavens. Like a gleeful teenager, I like the title causing discomfort in others. I also love the contrasting erudite single first word ruminations with the internally contrasting holy profane couplet, God's Dick. My navy moleskin journal bears witness to a transformation of titles. Pages of words layered in multiple colors cross out and question marks culminate in a clean blank page, thick pen framing the first workable title of less than 8 words. God doesn't have a white dick. I like that people would see the title God doesn't have a white dick and then be forced to visualize Zeus's schlong or Santa's schmeckle in Technicolor. God doesn't have a white dick would also allow me to touch not only on patriarchy, but also its ugly racism. As I hold a position of privilege based on my skin's minimal melanin, I feel moved to call attention to the implicit racism of the perennial depiction of God as white. A postgraduate degree in religion, and I'm not sure about much theologically. School can really destabilize all certainty. But I'm as certain as I could be about this. All those blonde hair, blue-eyed images of Jesus don't make history's most famous Jew a Scandinavian, or God a dude. Jesus wasn't white, and God is a construct beyond the confines of gender. Seriously, even the Bible, the seemingly greatest authoritative source of fun facts about the nature of God, God isn't white or a cis dude. The Bible, and while these verses are rarely referenced, portrays God often as mother. And more than that, there's the story of the 6th day of creation, the creation of people. God, in Genesis 1:26, creates Adam the mud thing in the image of God, male and female both. That would be that God is intersexed. And there's one other thing I miss about the title, God Doesn't Have a White Dick. It gave birth to a fantasy of someone disagreeing with my outrageous, open-minded religious attitude and defending their position with, well, no, God does have a white dick. In my imagination, I would pause and then slyly ask, how exactly do you know? I meet Phil and his wife Mary in the summer of 1996 near his Pierre de Terre overlooking the Hudson at 79th Street. In neighborhood Italian restaurant, we order appetizers. Jane, his daughter, and my paramour excuses herself to the bathroom. Tell me, young man, what are your intentions with my daughter? I don't consciously think of saying it. The words just come out of my mouth. So is this how it's going to be? Huh, Phil? I can't believe I said that, and neither can he. We both laugh. This is reality, and books are judged both on their titles and their cover, and Phil was right. Books with the word liberty outsell books with the word dick in their title by a large margin. That's true. But is the success of a religious book to be measured in sales volume? While it's perverse and certainly idolatrous, I can understand why many attempt to convince themselves that God has a dick any color. It's appealingly neat, simple, something even a kid could understand. God as Dad allows us to put the incomprehensible into an understandable construct of a father. Even if it's wrong, God as parent allows us to infer why bad things happen, right or wrong, whether we think of the progenitor as loving or stern, the image is familiar and comfy. But the universe is not asking us to be its child. The universe asks us to partner, to wake up to life, not to be less than or ruled over, but to be part of creation. There is more than your mortal constructs, much more, the universe whispers. Real religious thoughts are mind-blowing, like predicate theology, that God is nothing supernatural, but instead a verb, that God is made present when we act with love, with truth, with compassion, not God as person, but godliness in action. How about apophatic theology? God is not definable. As soon as you come up with a definition, you're lost. Apophatic means one through negation. So you can only say what God is not, not what God is. And Hartthorne's dipolar theism, listen to this. God is the self-surpassing surpasser of self. There are many non-patriarchal notions of God that I love. That God is a Platonic ideal. That God is somewhere between Fromm's word as a placeholder for our highest ideals and Jung's greater collective consciousness. Maybe God is only around when we have space for God. I'll adapt the words of Lao Tzu. There was something formless and perfect before the universe was born. It is serene, empty, unchanging, infinite, eternal, present. It is the mother of the universe. For lack of better name, I call it God. And I love God. And God's bigger than your daddy issues. When we didn't see eye to eye about God's dick in the title of the book, I pivoted the conversation. Let me tell you about a different book in my publishing pipeline. It's called Meditation is Magic, A Magical Guide to Meditation and Mindfulness. Before hearing the details, Phil tells me the title should be, I Wasn't Just Thinking That. Gotta hand it to him, 87-inch sharp. Phil, that's a great title for a meditation book, a different one. Mine targets a smart, fun-at-heart adults who need a My Little Pony Meditation is Magic introduction to meditation. Now that sounds like a good idea, partner. Keep it classy, engaging. I don't tell him that the dragon pony and I occasionally let fly a curse word. He'll see that when it's published. We'll laugh about it then. The end.
I love it.
Well done. That was wonderful, Brian.
Thank you.
Absolutely. I loved every word you just said.
I appreciate the thumbs up. I think this is a big problem that we have, and we're seeing in this problems of the patriarchy. Is that we've adapted a patriarchal notion and we venerate a patriarchal notion of the divine and of religion, and it doesn't fit anymore. And there are literally, I just thought of, I spoke with Hera Rhinus, and she helped me to see this. There are literally infinite other possibilities than patriarchy. Literally infinite other possibilities. Amen. Gloria, you have your hand raised.
Yes. While you were talking about the image of God, the typical one, you reminded me of a minister that we have at Wesley United here in St. John's, Newfoundland, Canada. Susan actually sent it to us. He did a video where he was basically doing a monologue and talking to your typical picture of Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very interesting, and I'd like to send it to you.
I'd love to see that. Thanks, Gloria. I like creative things in religion.
Yeah.
Oh, that was a whole thing I was going to start us with today, but I missed that. I was going to ask a question. I'm going to ask it now. Why not? The question was, what is the point of a religious service? I came up with some options. The question was, what is the point of a religious service? And I came up with option one. I'll give you at least three. Option one. Sing songs to the one true God. And then you have to, like, define all those words however you like them. Two, point of a religious service, connect to each other. Well, that makes sense. And then I heard Matthew Fox, who's a brilliant historian, and he wrote a book. If you want to know who Jesus really was, get a book by Matthew Fox, any book by Matthew Fox, and you'll find out who the historical Jesus really was. Because there's scholarship that can be done, and there's things that they know and there are things they don't know, and you find out stuff that it's amazing. But he said that the real reason you could pray to God anywhere, you don't need a community for that. He said the reason that the early churches organized was for sedition. You needed to have a place that was safe away from Rome, where Rome couldn't bother you. And that's what Jesus was killed for, being a seditionist. Right? That's why Jesus died. The heresy was, he said, down with Rome. I don't need to say much about the world we're living in right now. I think the point of religious service is to connect us to each other, to give each other some help. I had this other question. It relates to it, and I'll swing back here. This could be fun. Surely it's probably not going to be, but I said your name just to put you on alert that I'm going to ask you to help. I'm picking on Shirley, one, because I adore her, and two, she does improv, so she should be all right with this. But now it puts extra pressure on. So, Shirley, here's a question I have. If you were to get in touch with the Muses, like you have a huge art project coming up, and you want to get in touch with the Muses, how would you go about figuring out the best way to get in touch with the Muses?
The way I go about it,
yeah,
is to be like we are now.
Uh-huh.
I get an image. My brain operates really unique.
Yeah, yeah, you're you.
I get in touch with it by forgetting where I am and being where I am.
Now, let me ask you a question. If I tell you that I talked to the people in Delphi, Greece, which was one of the traditional homes for the Muses, and they're saying you're doing that completely wrong.
You froze. I'm sorry.
That was probably Pan or one of the other sprites who's trying to mess up the community.
I'm sure it was. Darn it.
So my question was, you're saying this is how you get in touch with the Muses, and I'm telling you that the people I contacted in Delphi in Greece, which is one of the traditional homes of the Muses, are saying that you are doing that completely wrong.
I probably am.
Does it matter?
No. What matters is that when I let go of everything around me...
Wait, but they said you have to do this all in Greek, actually.
I don't do it in Greek.
Well, you... Okay. I see smiles and faces getting... Like, you all get the joke here, right?
Yes.
And Shirley, thank you. That was not the way I thought it was going to play out, but that was even better. And I have no one to thank for that but the Muses themselves, so...
They're so wonderful that they're active around us always and
amen.
And messing with us and giving us beautiful. I think the word inspiration. By
it does. Itself, yeah, yeah.
Something else breathes something into us.
Right. It's inspire with breath. Do you know the other word that's like that?
Enthusiasm.
Enthusiasm.
Right.
Enthusiasm means means in theos, enthusiasm, in God, yes. Enthusiasm. Yeah.
You don't control it. Yes. So there you go. There's the answer.
Oh, good. Okay. So I never got to this card, which was the one thing I said that we were going to look at in the promo. But, hey, we're going to put that up for next week.
Next episode.
For the next episode. This is a live show. So I want to just go over what we did talk about today. We talked about children. And whether or not we should have children in a service, and what does it matter? We talked about focusing in? Hold on. There you go. We talked about pies, and we talked about five different little pictures. Mm-hmm. You got those?
No.
Did you not see? Can you not see my page there? All right. So we talked. We also talked about that, and then we talked about this Edgar Guest quote. I lost the card for it. Anyway, we talked about the Edgar Guest quote. And then I did a little bit of a reading from an upcoming book. And we ended with this weird notion of the muses, which hopefully inspires you all to remember that you can do this any way that makes sense to you. There's no official committee in Delphi. Okay. Now that I've reviewed all the pieces of what we talked about, there are other things, obviously, that were talked about. What's something you're going to take with you? What's something you're going to leave here with? Something you discovered, realized, or learned yet again, something that you intend to do. Based on what we talked about, what do you have? What's something that you learned or discovered or realized? You know what I rediscovered? I rediscovered because we had virtual magic camp this week, and I don't know how well I teach online because I'm the one who's doing it. But I saw some of my classmates, my colleagues, teaching some of their classes, and I really am rediscovering I really do this well. And it's kind of fun. So, yay me. What are things that you learned that you've taken with you from this week?
How important it is to pay it forward without, just because it's within you to do that, not because someone said pay it forward.
Amen. Pay it forward because that's what you got to do. Thank you, Linda. Appreciate that. What's something else? Right. It's best if you give it away. Something else that we learned that we're taking with us this week. Candace and then Shirley.
To preach it with my mouth shut.
To preach it with your mouth shut. I like that. And Shirley?
That's the idea of God and communion and who she, he, it is present in the gathering of all of us.
Amen.
I experience it by listening to you, by seeing every smiling face here, and then that image of, for me, is this connection. I see a silver cord tying us together.
I love it.
And then it goes up to the heavens.
I love it. Again, I'm just getting the facts checking. People from Greece are saying that's totally not true.
I know. I'm telling you, I don't know what I'm doing, but it's working for me.
Yeah. Okay. They say keep doing that. So that's great. They just said that's wonderful. Keep doing it. You do you, Shirley. What else did people take? Ray, what do you have?
Well, to take on what Shirley said, not only are we together, but spirituality and religion or whatever, however you want to word that, is out there, even when it's just you.
Amen.
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 Yes.
Rags?
What I wrote down in the chat was listen to the muses.
Yeah.
I've had a lot of invitations in the last week or 10 days to creativity. And I should listen to that and do that instead of whatever other crazy thing I'm occupying myself.
Yeah. I can tell you that if you don't do what the muses want you to do, they can be nasty. Yeah, they're like high school girls sometimes. They're mean. They're mean sometimes. I don't tell them I said that. Anything else? So I appreciate. So here's the thing. I sit down. I try to make little notes of what we're doing and how long each piece takes. And I don't really know it. You can see I do my best outlines. We might be ending a moment early. That's just my nice way of saying, take it easy on this, Rabbi. This isn't fixed. I have some quick announcements. Here we go. I practiced this. Join me for meditation, July 27, 2020, 1:30 p.m. Introduction to meditation class. Thank you. I will be teaching a meditation class at 1:30 on the 27th. If you can be there, fantastic. It will be less than a half an hour, and we will be using the source material, Meditation is Magic. It's awesome.
Will you send an invitation?
I will. I promise you this is the most fun book on meditation. Oh, I sent it to the Dalai Lama's people to see if they'd give me an endorsement. They won't. Their quote was, "We take meditation seriously." I was like, I think y'all are missing it, but that's okay. It didn't make it. Go ahead.
Something wrong about the Dalai Lama. He was asked, "What is your religion?" And he said, "Kindness."
Yes.
Yeah. Well, no. It was his people, his handlers. I know. Right. I know. Because I also saw a video of the Dalai Lama meeting somebody. And it inspired me. So the Dalai Lama, I think it's with Desmond Tutu, they tickle each other when they greet each other.
Yeah.
And so I told my friend Greg, my best friend Greg here, who I met when he was like, we were like in our early 40s. And I said to him, "Listen, dude, when COVID's over, I'm tickling you." And he had that really awkward look on his face. You know how you can say, I'm gonna get you? You can say that to anyone like 3 or under. So I said, I'm like, COVID's over. I'm tickling. It was okay. So that's that one. Also, let me definitely say this. I want to thank anyone who has contributed to help this ministry to run. So thank you to everyone who's donated. Because that's how I get to offer free programming to so many people, and it's pretty awesome. So thank you for all that. And we're going to sign off a few moments early today. Wait. Oh, come on. Wrong slides.
Tickle, tickle, tickle.
There we go. I will see you guys hopefully all next week. Everyone go be well.
Thank you. Thank you, Rabbi.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.